And today on our feature, well, we're going to move up our weekly visit with Mike Zuzulo talking commodity markets because of our coverage on Friday of the Prairie Land Steam Show that takes place here in Jacksonville. And so again, join us, Mike Zuzulo of Global Analytics out of Atchison, Kansas. Mike's phone number, 866-471-2588. Not designed as advice to buy or sell, as trading commodities carry substantial risk of loss. And with that out of the way, Mike, I guess gravity says everything goes down, and I guess where do we hit ground where we can't go any lower in these markets?
Well, here at midweek, I think what we've talked about, especially last week and throughout the marketing year, you know, we're trying to see the wheat post a little bit of a resistance to going down, and finding the path of least resistance is not as easily to go lower, and I think that's real healthy in the market. I'm not ready to say we've got buy signals yet in this trade, and that the grain indexes are ready to stimulate a buy signal, and we can have a significant short covering rally, Roger. But I can say at this point that we've tested that 200-month moving average in the lead month soft red wheat. We've come back and hit that 474.5 level, not gone below it. And that's that level, that 200-month moving average, we haven't gone below since November of 2005. So it's a big, big technical indicator for me, because it would open up the downside more if we would take it out. But having said that, we haven't taken that out. And we've also seen the December-July spread come around very sharply. Almost 25 cents of premium been put back into the front end December. And whenever you see spreads like the lead month spread against a new crop spread turn like that, and the carry gets pushed back into the front end, and you start to move towards an inverted market again, that should be especially taken notice of. And one of the contacts at the Newswires wrote yesterday to me that it looked as though that there was spread unwinding of the wheat bear spread, and it could have been because we sold some soft red wheat to Egypt over the weekend, and there is a rumor here at midweek that there's more soft red wheat possibly being sold in the export market in the Great Lakes. And so that would be very interesting to see that happen, given that's not our normal place to sell in the export market. Gives us an idea maybe that the quality and the price has finally hit a level where the trade is seeking U.S. wheat product again. That's real healthy for the corn market, and to a lesser degree the bean market. Historically, based upon my analysis of the last 20 to 25 years, wheat tends to make a low about 20 to 30 days ahead of the corn market, and this would especially make sense given that we're starting in the middle and getting into the middle of corn harvest in the next 30 days.
Well, it's interesting. I read an article as some analyst was talking about the idea that, normally speaking, moves like this last about 18 months. Is that a pretty fair assessment?
Yeah, I go more by percentages than I do months, but I do track the cycles, and I think you are on the long end of the break. I mean, if you look at just the ethanol market, it's getting some attention because it's fallen about 30%, about 27 to 30% off of its highs to its recent low here this week in just the last 4 weeks. These types of percentage moves in some of these commodities are getting extremely historical in terms of likelihood or probability, statistically speaking. I think the December corn price getting down to that 335 and then breaking to 325 would suggest to me that we're near the 100% level of where we've been in the last 5 years, including 2009, as far as price approaching the price level that we've been able to get to. In other words, there's less than 1% likelihood, statistically speaking, that you should go below the 325 level if you use that specific probability schematic. Now, the other thing I would say is my models that I use on the price elasticity for corn and beans at 325 lead month corn, the trade's running at about a 2.4 billion bushel carryover. I find that very interesting given the FSA acreage data that the trade continues not to put into the market, and we saw that Friday very blatantly, that when Informa came out with a very respectable and I would dare say bullish number for corn, the trade had nothing to do with that. So I think it's important to realize that if that model's right, we're already pricing in a 2.4 billion bushel carryover, and beans have fallen even more rapidly. 9.35 lead month futures on my model would suggest we're running at about a 475 to 480 million bushel carryover at this point in time as we get closer to the grain stocks report in about a week.
So it's interesting. I have said seen some suggest that 325 was kind of a pretty good floor, so to speak, for corn, and yet I've heard others saying we could test the 280 mark. I mean, are we undervalued now? And if we were to go that low, how much undervalued would we be there?
Yeah, without a doubt. To try and connect those two pieces of information, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that, yes, we are severely undervalued, but we could go lower if the wheat leads us there, especially in the corn. And so what we're looking for here is that demand low in wheat. But if we would take that 200-month moving average out of just under 475 in wheat, the next stopping point is around 4.25. And some of my colleagues in Europe in the wheat market are expecting that that is a probable level to hit if the technicals don't hold. Why? Because that was the low back in 2009 and 2010. So then the corn could be pushed even lower and into a more of an extreme undervalue level. What we're looking for now in midweek here as we get closer to the end of the month is a demand low for wheat when testing of that 05 200-month moving average holds. And all of a sudden then, does that then attract end users in the cash market for the wheat especially who have been on the sidelines expecting it to fall and fall and fall and have been right for the last 6 to 8 months?
Well, and I had this discussion with some people yesterday, for example, and talking about the idea that already there's at least some surveys out suggesting that maybe for 2015 in the U.S. we may plant more acres of beans than corn the first time in a very long time. But some people suggesting maybe that should be a little cautious going that far out.
Well, it is early at this point to try and throw that out there, but I think one thing can be said at this point, and it's early in harvest, so I want to make that remark as well, but from what I'm gathering, the bean yields are much more impressive than the corn yields at this stage of the game. And so if you are in a tight cash flow spot because your hedging wasn't very good this year because you did what you have done the last 3 years and been absolutely correct about it, and that's been a slow seller until you get to your knowing what your crop can make and you relied upon your crop insurance. And then that plan, like I said, has worked very nicely the last 3 years. But if you're in that situation this year and you're under cost constraints going into 15 and you see 75 bushel beans and 80 bushel beans like I am hearing in some fields in Illinois and Indiana, then you would probably take a real hard look at increasing your soybean acres. I am not recommending that to producers for the 2015 level unless it's an individual basis where they can really show me that they're not digging themselves into a hole. And I say that, Roger, because the South Americans are really ahead of us on this, and they're pumping up the acres and the volume in the soybeans, and that's only going to get more significant as their weather improves and as their currency improves. And so I think it's probably Johnny come lately if you try and plant too many bean acres here in the United States next year, because the South Americans probably will have gotten most of the premium by doing the exact same thing 6 to 9 months earlier.
Of course, that's assuming that they would have good growing weather.
That's assuming that you don't have an El Nino, and that is your, to me, that is your 2015 marketing plan here in the United States and your 2014 re-ownership plan. If you're dumping beans to make room for corn on farm, which I think is the right thing to do for 2014, and you're looking at selling some 2015 here, worried that we're going to go from $9.50 down to $9 or sub $9, that's all fine and good. But if you would build an El Nino in the Southern Hemisphere, you better be ready to re-own and defend those sales, because that is not typically and historically very good for the market. And I think it's really worth noting, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange just put out on Wednesday morning a very interesting statistic. The soybean prices are hitting a four-year low here, but we've also seen a record open interest in soybean options. On Monday of this week, a record 212,641 contracts of options were traded, and 72% of that volume came from the puts. And so this market is very well sold at this stage of the game, and I think this is very worthwhile noting, especially given that the speculators in the Commitment of Traders report have continued to build up a net short position in beans while they add to their net longs in the corn. So you can see the bean-corn spread unwinding before our eyes on the Commitment to Traders report, and this suggests to me there's going to be fewer and fewer new sellers in the soybeans as we get into the October-November time period. So be careful about how you sell and be very diversified on how you sell as well.
Well, it's interesting, again, as historically speaking, a lot of people, I think even Dr. Good at Illinois has said, you know, we can't expect much until we're over the halfway hump, so to speak, on harvest, I guess on both corn and beans. All the reports, all these tremendous yields. What happens when the harvest really gets underway, say, north of 80 and west of the Illinois or Mississippi River, and yields start dropping off?
I think that's an extremely valuable point, as is the fact that the dollar index right now is going through its mid-July 2010 high, and it's now at the highest since it's been in early July of 2010, and it's extremely overbought on the longer-term charts. And so I think these two points have to be kept in mind. I think one thing that is even more prescient and more important to the producer and as he markets his grain are the freight rates, because of the fear that we've had in the industry of the North Dakota and northern Midwest and northern plains playing a role in grain transportation because of the Bakken oil and the shale oil. And that is starting to show up. I noticed, and I'm keeping track of this on a weekly basis for my clients, but I've noticed the freight rates for the secondary market shuttles, train shuttles, in delivery for October are starting to jump. They've come down a little bit, but they're on their way back up. You're talking about $4,000 a rail car right now for October in the secondary market, and that compares to about $500 in the last 3 years. So you're off your highs of almost $6,000 a rail car, but you're still very elevated compared to the last 3 years. And what that translates into, Roger, is if the futures market makes a low because the wheat market makes a low, don't expect your basis to react. And so these last few years, and this is what I'm suggesting to clients, these last few years, if you've expected the cash market to bottom first and the basis to pull the way back up for the futures, which has been correct, I would not expect that until you start to see these freight rates decline more toward normal levels. If the futures goes up and follows the wheat, this basis could widen more at the elevator level because of things like the railroad problems. So don't lock in your basis yet as long as the futures is going down. But once that futures bottoms, I think you really want to start looking at locking in basis, especially if you're within 10 or 15 days of delivering the cash corn.
Well, and then lastly, I guess, as you mentioned, the dollar value, as you were mentioning that, it thought went through my mind, what would change the course of the dollar right now and from a higher trend to a lower trend? And I guess one thing that comes to my mind is if you're a foreign buyer, I mean, that's why it's important to them, might be the November elections.
That's exactly right. You've got the political reasoning, and you've also got some macroeconomic reasoning. The trade has been on a very strong bend and has priced in my opinion, a very weak emerging market economy. They've priced in a lot of the Federal Reserve changing their policy to higher interest rates. But just today, on Wednesday, we received the August new home sales. They were up 18%, a six-year high. That's dollar bullish, but it's also hawkish for the Fed. In other words, gives the Fed, because the housing market's one of the key determinants that has kept them from raising rates faster because the housing market hasn't come around as fast. It's been one of the key determinants in moving them earlier or later in terms of raising actual rates. But so if that's Fed hawkish and rates could go up earlier, that would also mean that you have more interest rate upside potential. And both of these indicators, both the volatility, the interest rates, and the support of the strength of the new home sales, would be inflationary. And so I think it's important to watch the crude oil market, because the trade has been in the mindset that iron ore, copper, and crude oil demand is slipping in the emerging markets. And I think some of these indicators and economic data, if they come out here in September and show the exact opposite, then I think there's going to be quite a bit of need to short cover in some of these major raw materials. And that's going to be beneficial to the commodity industry and probably be inflationary to the commodity industry. And so that does temper your dollar bull.
Well, we'll conclude by simply saying, as each week goes by, we'll know more about what maybe the actual size of this crop is. And so as we go down the road, we'll have more, so to speak, to meat to put our teeth in.
That's right. And we'll see if the weather models stay dry. They're starting to get cold and wet in the back end of them right now.
And again, our thanks to Mike Zuzulo of Global Analytics out of Atchison, Kansas. Again, moving that up from Friday to today because we'll be at the Prairie Land Heritage Museum's Fall Festival and Steam Show.